Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. It seems like, you know, the routine's really kind of set in here from week to week on the Monday version of the show. We get in here, we start playing all the highlights from the week that was in Lions football, and I certainly don't plan on doing it any differently this week.
Yep.
Because yet another win, another no-doubter of a win, 24-6 ends up being your final against the Colts, who, yeah, I want to sit here and make fun of because they're the Colts. I wasn't, however, able to convince myself that, this is a team we should really fear, like, any more than people who thought that Jacksonville would be a trap game for the Lions. It seems like these days the Lions are almost immune from the trap game, really. Does it not?
The Indianapolis news outlets, somebody had shared a tweet or something from one of them, and it shows a picture of Colt Stadium, whatever it's called, you know.
Lucas Oil Stadium, yeah.
And it's all Lions jerseys.
Oh.
And they're saying, Indy Colt faithful, you guys should be ashamed of yourself. You left your team out high and dry, left them out to dry or something like that.
No, Anthony Richardson did that, but go on.
Oh, was that him?
Their QB, yes.
No, oh. Then maybe that's what I saw. But yeah, there was a picture of...
No, I'm saying he left them out high and dry by just playing like absolute garbage on Sunday.
Yeah, he was saying, you know, your team needed your support and you weren't there.
Yeah, I don't think it would have made any difference. But it was nice to see the Lions just absolutely taking over yet another opposing stadium. I mean, this is an easy one because Indy's only... It's a 4 or 5 hour drive from the Detroit metropolitan area.
Yep.
And... honestly, the tickets are probably a lot cheaper than they are for a Lions game at Ford Field these days.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't get a chance to see the game because I was doing like an early Thanksgiving thing with my mom, and we would sneak the TV on every once in a while, but she's not a football fan, and therefore we can't watch football.
Why does your mom hate the state? The city?
I don't know.
Of Detroit. I don't
get it because she's been to a game. I think I know. At one point, she's like, "Yeah, I'm going to go see Michigan play." Oh yeah, who are they? And it was like, this Saturday, and it ended up being the Ohio State Michigan game.
Oh my God!
This was a couple years ago. And but yeah, so she's been to like the biggest games, but you know, I just don't really get into it. She once won kind of like a fantasy football where they just everybody puts in $20 and you bet on a team and you hold on till they lose.
Yeah.
And she bet on the New Orleans Saints and won everything. She's like, I like their helmets. So anyway, I heard
Sorry if you tell me we're doing Thanksgiving and we can't have the Lions game on at that Thanksgiving. That's the last year I show up at your Thanksgiving.
At my house on this Thanksgiving, we're definitely watching the Bears Lions game. What I'm leading up to is a lot of people I saw on Book of Faces that they said it was a sloppy game.
I mean, it was in a lot of ways. Like there are a few things. I feel like there's a lot more things that would have had to have gone against you for this to be a particularly close game or have really any major issue. I mean, the big thing, of course, Kendall Vildor. Now, let's be honest here, though. If I can be serious for a moment, Kendall Vildor is never going to live down the ball bouncing off his face mask in the NFC title game. That's 90% of what that is. I mean, it wasn't good. He wasn't good yesterday. He did have three tackles on the day for what it's worth. And while he may have been responsible for a few things that I ain't necessarily responsible for, but you know, his blown coverage on his part may have led to some decent catches. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
They still you wanna know how many touchdowns he was responsible for letting happen? Zero.
Yep.
Cause they didn't score any.
Nope.
They were held to 2 field goals, 6 points on the day. So I'm not really that concerned about it. And again, I feel like, and I don't feel like it's exactly a stretch to say this, people still hold the NFC title game thing against him so much that he's just under that extra bit of scrutiny and like he'll never be able to do right in the eyes of the Lions fan base after that.
Yeah.
So I'm not... as worried, you know, upset, whatever, about that as a lot of people are. And honestly, the rest of the secondary did great on Sunday. So I'm not really mad about it. I mean, Kirby Joseph is still just doing a phenomenal job out there. Meek Robertson went and had a big stop on a fourth down. And again, a lot of people not happy. Brian Branch keeps drawing flags like crazy. I'll be honest with you. I don't want to see him stop doing what he's doing. I really don't. Like, I like the aggressiveness that we're seeing from him, and I don't want him to stop playing the physical style of ball that he does. And we'd hate to see that come as a result of the ridiculousness of him, you know, basically becoming a target with the refs.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not overly concerned about it. I truly am not. So, those things aside, yeah, there may have been some sloppy things, some things you would have rather not seen happen, but I can't really sit here and come down on the Lions in a day where you won by 18 points. I can't do it. I know there are plenty of fans out there that would love to see us come in here and just pick apart the things that they did ultimately do wrong. That ain't me. That ain't today. I can't sit here and do that when you won as decisively as you ultimately did. Not saying it always looked great at times, but the ugly wins are still wins. And again, you still won by more than two scores. So I can't sit here and do that show. I'm not going to sit here and do that show. That just, quite frankly, takes away from all of the fun that that this team has really brought us this week, this season, and whatnot. Before I get into our highlight reel here, you had mentioned something.
Yeah.
You're finally going out on a limb as a Lions fan.
Well, anybody who knows me knows that I have quite the extensive hockey jersey collection.
Yes, you do.
And I haven't really worn any because I've kind of, you know, some of them don't fit.
I thought you were going to say it's because we're pretending that that our hockey team doesn't exist. And, well.
No, because I wore a Red Wings sweater not too long ago. And I still wear them with pride. But, yeah, I love jerseys. And I bought my first Detroit Lions jersey.
Ooh, look at you guys. Yeah, clearly you went and got somebody like, I don't know, Jared Goff or Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, I know Hutch is injured right now, but, I mean, he's still a big name. Maybe you went with him.
I thought about Hutchinson. I wanted to show him a little bit of love after he got injured.
I know.
Michigan guy.
You went and got Gibbs or Montgomery, didn't you?
I did not. I went with Jake Bates. Number what? 39, Jake Bates.
What?
Hey,
you went and picked up a kicker's jersey?
Yes. The guy has been perfect this season. He's been making the impossible possible. He has, you know, whether it's a 58-yarder, he's been winning games. He's had a great season, has he not?
He has, but really, the kicker.
<Yeah. laughs> Yes, I did. Well,
of course you did.
They were, I don't
God, you're going to tell me you went and got the punter's jersey in that?
Which one's that? Okay. Jack Fox. I would root for the underdog. I root for the underdog every time. So, yeah, absolutely. He'll probably get that residual check. He's like, what? No, there's probably some like millionaires out there that I'm going to buy a jersey for every player on the Lions team.
And then, one's done that because there's literally 52 guys on, you know, on the roster at any given time.
Some people just have stupid money to burn. They truly do.
I don't think even the people with the stupidest money are going and doing that. I can almost guarantee it. There's no one out there who has a Kendall Vildor jersey.
They were.
I would bet money on that.
They were on it was a stupid sale on NFL Fanatics or something like that, and I was like, all right, so I picked myself up a jersey for $40.
I mean, I'll give you credit for paying, you know, getting $40 for a Lions jersey.
You know what? If they make it to the big barbecue and they win it because of a kick, I will gladly wear that jersey with pride. And everybody was like, oh, why'd you get a kicker? I was like, who won the Super Bowl? I mean, excuse me, the big barbecue?
Oh, here he goes again. Oh, my God, I can't see the name.
I can't say it. I don't want to jinx him.
I think at this point we've established the Lions are fairly jinx-proof this season.
I don't know. I mean, the part of the game I did see was that number five.
David Montgomery.
He was out. He was questionable with like foot injury or something like that.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe we shouldn't have Adam watching games.
I tune in for just a little bit, and he's like on the table. I'm like, oh, no.
I swear, if Jake Bates ends up like snapping his leg or something because you wouldn't bought that jersey,
yeah.
You are hereby banned from buying Lions jerseys ever again, at least of current players. Unless it's like Kendall Vildor or something. Yeah.
I mean, I could have gotten, you know, Kelvin Johnson jersey fairly cheap. Or Barry Sanders. That was actually kind of cool. I almost thought about that. But no, the current roster has earned a lot of respect, especially Jake Bates, the kicker. It's an exciting time to be alive, to be a Lions fan.
Certainly it is. So, shall we highlights?
Let's highlight.
All right. We'll start with this this nice little catch in the first. My, Tim Patrick is really coming to be I don't think anyone expected him to be a key cog of this offense by any means. And yet he's managed to make some really nice plays this season for this team.
Goff out of the gun. He's got it. Back and looking, rolling left now. Jared loads and throws. Got a complete Tim Patrick into Colts territory, inside the 40, inside the 35, and he's run out of bounds at the 33-yard line. Really nice job by Jared Goff that time. Felt the pressure, had to get out, rolled, found 17, and they turned that into a 27-yard gain.
You really just love to see, especially a guy like him who really has not been, I think it was counted out by a lot of people, like, oh, he's not going to get any targets anyway. He got 4 targets on the day, and he caught all 4 of them and turned it into 55 yards. Like, I don't think there was really anybody on the receiver unit that didn't do exactly what was asked of them. All that sets up this to give the Lions their first lead of the day. I give you Jahmyr Gibbs.
Jared takes, hands it, Gibbs, left side, touched it up to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Patient running.
Hear that crowd?
That time. Couple of Colts defenders out there waited for his blocking, got it, found the house.
You got to love that, by the way. Like you pointed out there that the way the Lions absolutely, the fans took over Lucas Oil Stadium. Honestly, I kind of wish I would have been able to make it to that game. Because that would have been...
You've been to Indy many times.
I have been to Indy. I've never been to their football stadium, though.
You've never had a bad time in Indy. You've always come back with booze and smiles.
Oh, yeah. It's just impossible to not have fun in that town. It's a fun town to drink in, let me tell you what. And then, not only that, apparently the Lions fans were just taking over all the... Apparently the Lions fans kind of took over St. Elmo's Steakhouse afterwards, from what I hear.
St. Elmo Steakhouse. They're like, where's Andrew McCarthy? Where's Judd Nelson?
So not to be left out of the fun, David Montgomery then has a couple plays that extend the Lions' lead on the Colts.
Jared takes the snap, hands to Demo over the right side, fighting inside the 15, getting the first down, inside the 10, still going down to the 6-yard line. David Montgomery just carrying Colts with him for the final 6 yards, picks up 13. Jared looking out over that defense, now he leans in. There's the snap, hands to Montgomery, bounces left, yep. Finds the angle, spinning, end zone, touchdown Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, what a run by David Montgomery that time. He got down to the 2, felt some contact, spun his way in, and the Lions add to their lead.
And at that point, it's starting to feel like, all right, they're going to pull away from this, and Indy's not just never going to catch up, and sure enough, they didn't. Now, there was this, again, you know, there's got to be the certain subsection of Lions fans that always get on the coaching decisions.
Every time.
And this was one of those. It's the sort of thing that's basically tailor-made for the Dan Gamble, a situation where you just know. Like, you don't even have to think about it to know what Dan Campbell's going to do in that moment. You don't necessarily know if it's going to work out for you, but you do for sure know that it's going to end up being a... It's going to be the thing that he has to do. So, 4th and 1. You're on the Indianapolis 14-yard line. And he keeps the offense on the field. And it goes not the way you would hope.
Jared takes, gives to Montgomery. Hit in the backfield, taken down. Did not get it.
Such a long development.
First man in, Zaire Franklin, and the play was blown up from there. Just terrific work. Penetration that time from Indianapolis, and the Lions come up empty after they go for it on fourth down on the opening drive here of the third quarter.
I mean, you hate to see it go down that way, honestly, but I am fine. You're up 14-6. I am 110% fine with going for it, fourth and one from your opponent's 16-yard line, especially against against an Indy team that clearly is not on your level. I'm not going to complain about that whatsoever. You could make an argument that the Lions should have been a little more aggressive at the end of the half. I mean, I get why. I mean, you're starting at your own 10-yard line, and at this point, you're trying to just burn the clock as much as more than anything, not give the ball back to Indy before halftime. So I can't criticize him for that. I mean, you can make an argument that maybe that the play, I mean, the play got blown up pretty early on. It was kind of a slow developing thing that may not have had, that ultimately didn't have much of a chance of working. But I can't fault Dan Campbell for going it. Like, I always say, live by the Dan Gamble, you die by the Dan Gamble, yep, man. That's just, you kind of get used to that with this team. Like, you kind of expect it. Like, it's what makes, it's one of the things that makes this team as much fun to watch as they are. It makes this Lions team fun. It really does.
Yep.
So I can't really sit here and say that I'm overly mad about it. From there, we go back to Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, who between them had a day on Sunday. Like, the yards weren't exactly always easy to come by, but for both of them, they combined for 127 rushing yards, but 3 rushing touchdowns and 45 receiving yards. Yeah, we're not done with these two yet. Here, David Montgomery.
Goff takes, fakes the end around, now sets it up, throws a screen, got it complete to Montgomery inside the 35. Montgomery spins out of a tackle to the 30, still going at the 26, and down to the 25-yard line. David Montgomery just spinning away from contact, picking up 14 yards, finally brought down by Buckner and Stewart, but man, he is just like a top out there, just spinning away from everything he hits. Jared leans in. There's the snap. Jared hands it to Gibbs over the right side, trying to get to the edge. He will. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Felt the contact. Just kept going outside until he found an opening. And he did. Second touchdown of the day for Jahmyr Gibbs.
You just love to see it. Those guys were on their game. This next one's for you, Adam.
Yeah.
I know you're, as we just established, the guy that you just bought the jersey from. Jake Bates putting kind of the exclamation point on this thing.
So it is a 56-yard field goal attempt for Jake Bates. Hash mark right side. Bates is ready. Spot down. Kick away. It is up, and it is good.
Boom.
He sent that thing through there like a rocket, man. 16 for 16 on the year now as he knocks it through.
Justifying your love, I suppose.
What was the yardage on that?
56.
Jeez. The master.
I know you're a big fan here. All right. Just because I want to get a little bit of fun here.
The master.
Indy, they attempted to go for it on 4th and 6 because they really had no choice but to do so.
Right.
It didn't go well.
Indianapolis has no choice but to go for it. Richardson pumps, throws. It is caught.
Nice.
Down at the 25-yard line. Amik Robertson takes down the receiver shy of the line to gain, and the Lions are going to take over on downs. Pittman caught it, but Amik was all over him immediately, and the Lions will have the football back.
Not a great day for Anthony Richardson by any means, which I don't think anyone expected anything less, given that he was going up against a team the caliber of the Lions,
the
arguably
juggernaut.
The best team in football right now.
Yep.
And at this point, I don't think anyone's going to argue me that they're the best team in football. Let's get the last little bit here. Jahmyr Gibbs with another nice little run.
Jared takes the snap, gives it to Gibbs. Gibbs gets across the 40 to the 45, still going to the 50, and shakes a man and gets down to the 47-yard line. Just dodging guys like he's in a phone booth. It is just crazy to watch him work. Tim Patrick with a nice block in there as well.
And Jameer takes it down into Colt territory at the 47-yard line before Womack finally made the stop, gain of 15.
Really, this the speed on Jameer Gibbs is impressive. And you hear that, too, every so often with Tim Patrick, the you know, like a key block somewhere in there that allows some of these runs to get more yardage than they otherwise probably would. It's really just nice to see this thing just in the offense in all areas just functioning like the well-oiled machine that it is. Bring us home, Dan.
Goff takes a knee, and that's going to do it. Two teams will meet out in the middle of the field to say job well done, job better done on this day by your NFC North leading Detroit Lions as they move their record to 10-1 on the season. Ninth consecutive win, second longest streak in franchise history. They are off to a great start and headed in to a critical, critical stretch here. Two NFC North games coming up back-to-back on Thursdays. They will be home to take on the Chicago Bears on Thanksgiving, and then a week later, home to take on the Green Bay Packers on a Thursday night in downtown Detroit.
And there's a couple things in that, too. Not only for one, NFC North leading, NFC leading, and still tied for the best record in all of football. And I have a feeling that there's going to be some discussion later about the other team that currently has the tie with them for that record. Well, we'll get to that in due time here.
Yes.
I did kind of want to touch on, though, from here, can you remember the last time the Lions were favored in the Thanksgiving game? Can you remember the last time the Lions were favored by double digits in the Thanksgiving game? I cannot.
Double digits? No. But I think there has been times where they have been favored because, I mean, who did they play last year?
Oh, was it? It wasn't Green Bay, was it?
No, I don't
believe it was. It wasn't a divisional
Houston?
Game, I don't believe.
Houston sticks out in my mind.
It was Green Bay.
Green Bay.
It was Green Bay, and they lost.
Oh.
Thanks for reminding me about that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But it seems like, I mean, they've now lost that game so many years in a row that there was talk that, you know, a lot of fans calling for them to lose that game altogether.
Yeah.
And I quite frankly don't think anyone could blame the league if they would have done that. Because I believe they literally lost seven or eight in a row on Thanksgiving Day. Like, I'm going back, you know, pre-COVID and have not come up with one yet where they managed to come away with the W. Like, it's been kind of... With the Lions for a long time, whenever they get on national TV, it was like they were snake bit, man. Like they just could not perform under the national stage. It certainly does not seem anymore like that's a problem. I certainly, if there's any indication with the Houston game on Sunday Night Football a few weeks back, yeah. So they've lost seven. They've lost their last seven Thanksgiving Day games.
Ugh.
And they come in as an 11-point favorite on the Bills. Like, Vegas has not figured out what to do with this team. Like you seemingly can't set the spread high enough, the Lions still find a way to beat it.
Yep.
We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. Well, I feel like for the most part, we've said everything that needs to be said about the Lions. I mean, like I said, you're going into Thanksgiving as an 11-point favorite against a division rival, which is something that... This doesn't happen. This is like college football spreads here, but somehow the Lions seemingly can't set a spread high enough that the Lions can't beat it. I don't know how it is.
This is a great time to be a Lions fan, and for the first time
really
ever,
is.
A lot of people, it's like they can come out of the closet and say, yes, I'm a Lions fan. I don't have to make an excuse for them every Monday. I mean, I'm hearing, like, you know, they're petitioning to change the name of the state from Michigan to Michigoff, something like that. So it's, you know, good for them. I mean, this is exciting.
Very exciting. I guess I should probably apologize to the state of Michigoff, huh?
Michigoff, yes.
You can't get away with it. Apparently, even at the game on Sunday in Indy, they were doing the Jared Goff chant.
Yes, they were.
It's a thing. Like it's.
Oh, there's a lot of people at Red Wing games that get upset. Why are they chanting Jared Goff at the? Because it's Detroit sports are supposed to be all united, and so everyone's excited.
I know, but it still gets annoying sometimes. I'm not gonna lie. Like I think it's a bit over the top myself.
You
but...
know what? We've waited a long time to have this kind of excitement for the Lions. As a Red Wings fan, chant Jared Goff all you want.
Well, you heard it here first from the official, the chairman of the hockey fans, the hockey elite.
Elite. Look at you.
But we do, before, we and we will get into a little bit of hockey later.
Yeah.
But we have a little, yes, yes, Adam, we have to. But in the meantime, things happen this week that are not related to your Detroit Football Lions in places around the National Football League. And that means things have been wildly overreacted to. So you know what that means. This is where you count on me, for some reason, to tell you what's reality and what's fact and what's fiction. Let's get into some overreaction, shall we? Maestro, the music, please.
All right. We start with a big one. We're coming out right out of the gate.
Oh, my.
Is this an overreaction or is this reality? The Chiefs are playing with fire with these one possession games.
How did you come that close to losing to the Carolina Panthers? Like, I told you the rules earlier. Like, if you lose to the Carolina Panthers, your coach gets fired.
Yeah.
And no one wanted to see Andy Reid get thrown out, fired out of a cannon into the sun, but we wouldn't have had a choice. That's the rules. That's just
Andy Reid would have voluntarily stepped down.
I mean, you need a 31-yard field goal as time was expiring to beat the worst team in football.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing to me. I mean, this is now the 13th consecutive game this team has won, but where it's been decided by one possession, which is the longest streak now in NFL history. There's no way they can keep
it. Wow.
This is ridiculous.
Every Sunday, it's like, this is the biggest blah, blah, blah in NFL history.
There does seem to be a lot of that lately.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a 5-1 record against teams with winning records. So, I mean, they've managed to get it done, except against Buffalo. But I don't see this team making I don't see them making a Super Bowl run this year. If I have to sit here and be honest with you, I don't think KC makes it back to the Super Bowl this year.
Okay.
There's just too many flaws, quite honestly, on this roster. Buffalo already has beaten them, and I think the Ravens could. I mean, not that these teams don't have weaknesses in their own right. The Lions are better at stopping the run than anybody, and you take away Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson's ability to run the football, and you don't have a whole lot left. Also, the Ravens' defense is terrible. But this is not KC of old. I don't think it's that much of an overreaction. You really are kind of playing with fire here. At some point, leaving it close against an awful team like Carolina, much less against the good teams you face, is going to come back to burn you.
Well, okay, sidebar. If it's not KC going to the big barbecue, who is?
It's either Baltimore or Buffalo right now, I feel.
Really?
And as to which one I see actually being able to make it to the Super Bowl, I think it could be Buffalo, honestly.
You know what's going to break my heart is if the Lions and Ravens meet up in the big barbecue.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to do your little nevermore bit, are you?
No. That's going to come back and bite me sufficiently. All right,
is why you know what's going to happen now, because it's going to set you up.
I just jinxed myself.
You did.
Yeah, you guys are going to be watching the Super Bowl. I'll be watching like Gilmore Girls or something like that. Is this an overreaction or a reality? Vikings are a conference title contender in the NFC.
No, not even close. I'm sorry. You're not a contender for anything. Division
barely
title,
squeaked
title.
Out a win against the Bears.
But they did win against the Bears.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been as close as it was, but they have won 4 straight games. But keep in mind, all those games were against teams that had losing records. You haven't played a team with a winning record since week 8 of the season, which, I mean, there's not much you can do there. You only have the schedule that you're assigned. But no, I don't think that they are. Like, you have a big stretch of games that are going to test you coming up. Because in the 5 of the 6 games they still have are going to be against teams that have a 500 record or better. And looking at how I expect it to play out for the Vikings, I don't exactly think you can beat Arizona, but that's not a guarantee. Atlanta's not a guaranteed win by any means. You're going to beat Chicago. I don't think you beat... You could beat... You beat Green Bay last time. There's no nothing saying you can't do it again. But then you finish the season against the Lions, and you're not winning that game.
No.
Unless we just bench everybody and start Hendon Hooker. And then even then. Like, it's going to be a little bit of a challenging stretch, you know, down the home stretch here for that team.
Yep.
They're not in really contention for, like, they'll probably win a game in the postseason, if I had to guess. But you're not getting past the Lions. Absolutely not.
The Seahawks will win the NFC West.
My, that... I don't know how anyone's predicting anything in the NFC West. This is the most competitive division in football. Like, everyone's within a game of each other. Seattle is currently tied for the lead against Arizona at 6-5. The other two teams are 5-6. And as of right now, Seattle has the tiebreaker with the win over the Cardinals on Sunday. I can't predict anything yet. I'm saying it's an overreaction right now because nobody's really running away with this. The Cardinals have the head-to-head over the Rams and Niners. The Seahawks, as of right now, have the tiebreaker over the Cards. The Seahawks still have to play the Packers and Vikings coming up. And I don't like your odds there at all. They have a 2-2 record in their own division. And I'm not declaring anyone the winner right now at this thing.
It's pretty tight.
It is very tight, and no team is really looking strong enough to pull away from the pack here.
Yep.
And if they do, I don't think Seattle would be it. I think the Niners have a better chance than anything. But everyone's got a pretty tough road the rest of the way here.
All right, Texans are a one-and-done team in the playoffs. Is that an overreaction, or is that reality?
You know, at one point, I would have told you that this is absolutely an overreaction, but it seems like Houston is not quite building up the way we thought they were. Like, Nico Collins is back, which is certainly a nice addition for the offense there. Problem is CJ Stroud just keeps turning the ball over, and that's becoming a real issue. Like, you lost to the Titans, who are not a good football team at all. A 3-8 Tennessee team, you should have been able to just manhandle the Titans. Instead, you end up getting in a shootout with them and losing, and that's disappointing to say the least of it. That's not exactly a thing that you wanted to see if you're rooting for Houston here. It was sad. Like, you had two picks on the day for Stroud, two touchdowns, but two picks. Got sacked four times. Like, things just are not going well for this team. They can't compete with the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens. Like, all of a sudden, the AFC has really kind of separated very much into Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, everybody else. Like, there's not another team in there. I mean, I don't think Pittsburgh's even on the same level as those three teams, but they're still, I'd say, a level ahead of Houston even. Like, this is a team that we thought was taking strides forward, and it seems that has that's kind of gone by the wayside, man. No, I would say that is absolutely, at this point, a reality. I do expect them to be a one-and-done team. It's, you hate to see it because it was kind of a feel-good story in a lot of ways. Like, a team that was kind of really that no one took seriously last year came out of nowhere, won a playoff game with a rookie QB and a rookie head coach.
Yep.
But honestly, right now, you're not even in that second tier of teams with, like, the Chargers, the Steelers. And I don't see you getting past any of those five teams come playoff time.
It's a Week 12 overreaction Monday. Is this an overreaction or reality? And Drew Duffney's probably listening. He's right at his radio right now. Commanders are going to miss the playoffs. Overreaction or reality?
I think we're overreacting a bit yet. Yeah, you lost to Dallas, admittedly. Your special teams gave up two kickoff return touchdowns in the fourth quarter, which was it was a wild game. You complete with missing an extra point. that would have tied things up ultimately. And Jaden Daniels did not look good and has not looked good over the last three games. The completion percentage over these last three down to 62%. Four total touchdowns to three turnovers and a 77.7 QB rating. The team's 0-3. They're not doing well. But here's why I'm telling you that they're absolutely still in playoff contention here. Look at the schedule the rest of the way. The Titans are terrible. The Saints are trash.
Yep.
The Eagles are the Eagles. The Falcons are... I think you can beat the Falcons.
You're looking at 3-1 right there.
And, yeah, the Cowboys and Jerry World have not done well. Like, the Cowboys got a win on the road this week, but remember, at home, they've been getting blown out pretty severely by and large this season. So, I think you still have absolutely at least three, maybe even four wins in that schedule the rest of the way. Who's overtaking them? Like, the NFC South is only sending one team to the playoffs. I would lock that in right now. I think the NFC North could send three. The NFC West isn't sending two. Like, no one can, like, those teams haven't pulled away enough in that division, quite honestly, to secure a wild card spot for any of them. Washington has not looked good of late, and I totally get that when you looked at, against the teams they've played, but two of those are easily playoff teams. Philly's obviously a playoff team. The Steelers are, of course, a playoff team. So am I going to sit here and say you can't make the playoffs at all based on those three games against two really good teams and the Cowboys, you know, a division rival? No, I'm not writing the book on it yet. I still think Washington does make it in because I don't see who passes them up.
Right.
The Rams and Seahawks are still a game or two behind. I believe both are. The Rams are two games behind Washington. And looking at their schedule the rest of the way, just real quick if we could, looking at the rest of the Rams have lined up. They've got three more games against division rivals and the Bills. They're not overtaking Washington, even with gimme games against the Saints and Jets on the schedule. The Seahawks, we already talked. They've got two more rivalry games on the schedule, and they have to go and play the other three teams in the NFC North. I don't see them pulling ahead either. So, no, absolutely overreaction. The Commanders are still making the playoffs.
We're going to Dallas. Cowboys shouldn't trade Micah Parsons at any cost. Is that a reality, or is that an overreaction?
It doesn't make sense to. If, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, when it seemed like we were getting up against the trade deadline, and it kind of started to seem like there might be some action made down in Jerry World on that, in that regard. That's the kind of move that you make if you're a team that doesn't, that like, completely a ship without a rudder. Like, you don't have a franchise QB. You don't have a star receiver or a star running back. And Dallas has two of those three things. You've locked up CeeDee Lamb for the long term, and CeeDee Lamb's going to continue to do CeeDee Lamb things. You've got Dak Prescott lined up, signed long term. You just signed him to a massive extension before he got hurt.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people want to dog on Dak and say he's not the franchise, he's not an elite franchise guy, but he is still a franchise QB who can get you far enough, at least get you to the playoffs consistently from year to year, and he has one of the best weapons in the league at his disposal. When you have the franchise QB and the franchise wide receiver and the ability to lock in the franchise defensive end, you do that every time, because whatever you're getting back in trade capital is not going to be nearly enough to justify letting a guy like Micah Parsons walk away at the prime of his career. It just isn't. You're never going to get appropriate return value on that by and large. If you didn't have either of those other positions locked up, like if you needed a QB and needed to take one in the next year's draft, then I'd say, all right, then we got to kind of look at it. Then I think you're at the point where you explore trading a Micah Parsons because it can restock the cupboard in the way that you would need at that point. But without that, I don't think whatever else you do with those draft picks is going to ultimately be up there with the value that you would get from that I think you would get from trading him. So no. Overreaction, I think you absolutely have to hold on to him. Like he's one of the top defensive guys in the league. Like you absolutely need to keep him there. He's a game changer. No doubt about it. And Dallas would be stupid given where they're only a few moves away. Like if Jerry does anything in the offseason last year, we're talking about a team that is absolutely that has already knocked Washington out as a playoff contender. So you're not that far away. You don't make a move like this.
Here, this one's a gimme for a Week 12 overreaction. Shoot. Monday. Brian, I don't even know how to say
Brian
this.
Brian Daboll.
Brian Daboll won't be the head coach of the Giants in 2025.
I mean, isn't that kind of obvious at this point?
Yeah.
You're clearly cutting bait with the prior regime in a lot of ways. You bench Daniel Jones, and then a couple days later, you cut him from the team outright, which I think the second that he got benched and we were told that he was going to be like QB like 4 in the system, like they weren't going to go back to him because they don't want to have to pay out that guaranteed money. I think we kind of knew Daboll's days were numbered, and
yeah.
He fell off as a coach. Like early on, it seemed like he was such a brilliant mind in Buffalo. Like this is going to work out really well for the Giants, and they did quite well in picking him up, and it just hasn't happened. Then they send Tommy Cutlets out there on Sunday, and he goes 21 of 31 for 189 yards, 3 for 5, 31 yards in the first half. He only attempted 5 passes in the entire first half of that game.
Wow.
And didn't even complete all of them. And at this point, you got to think Drew Lock can't do any worse than Tommy Cutlets. Like, Tommy DeVito doesn't really need to be starting games. It was a cute story watching him and his agent, who looks like a mafia member, going out there on Sundays and whatnot. But I don't. This isn't a serious organization. Let's just come right down to it. The New York Giants are not a serious football organization. Quite frankly, neither are the Jets, but that's an issue probably for later. Like, they played 6 straight games now without ever having a lead. That's insane. Like, watching this team just get laughed out of the building week after week after week. Daboll's letter of resignation was signed, or letter of termination was signed long before this. This is not only a reality, it's inevitable that it probably happens before the end of the season.
All right, let's talk about Rookie of the Year.
All right.
Bo Nix will win NFL Rookie of the Year over Jaden Daniels.
I feel like we've talked about this before. In fact, this may have come up last week.
Last Monday, the conversation continues.
I'm still not buying it. I know everyone's trying to bury the Commanders based on these last 3 weeks against Pittsburgh and Philly and Dallas. I'm not ready to write the book yet. The Broncos, they're certainly playing themselves back into at least a potential playoff appearance, though I think they ultimately, if they do make it, they get smoked in the first round, and this ultimately doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I still think they are ultimately the third best team at best in the AFC West. Sorry, the Chargers just still look better. And while it's impressive, Bo Nix went out there Sunday and threw for 273 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I'll give you that's impressive. He now leads all rookies in total TDs and passing TDs. Has 18 to just 2 picks over his last 6 games. But Nix is kind of peaking right now. Jaden Daniels, I think he's still the front runner. And this ultimately is his award. The race is his to lose. And really, given the way the schedule favors the Commanders down the home stretch, like, I already told you that there's a reason why I think they still maintain their playoff position. They have a rather, not an easy road necessarily, but an easier road than a lot of other teams do. Meanwhile, Bo Nix is going to have to close out the season facing the Chiefs. He has to face the Chargers in L.A. Then you've got the Browns. The Colts, who are in theory not a terrible team, they're one that should be at least a contender to squeak in that last wild card spot. And Cincy, it's not exactly an overly difficult road, but half of those games are against division rivals who are both better than you.
Yeah.
And I feel like Daniels will be able to do enough in those last few games to come back and ultimately cement that Rookie of the Year award for himself. So, yes, overreaction.
Let's go to the NFC South, I believe.
Okay.
The Buccaneers will catch the Falcons and win the NFC South.
I can't see it happening, if I'm to be honest with you. I mean, was it fun to watch, you know, Tommy Cutlets and the Giants get beat down by the Bucs? Sure. But here's the thing. It's still the Giants. They're still not good. They're an abysmal team. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that based on a good performance against a garbage team that all of a sudden that's what makes the difference that the Bucs are going to turn it around and catch up to the Falcons. Though I am surprised that we are sitting in this situation right now, admittedly. From here, Tampa plays Carolina, which means I'm sure we're going to have to look at the same overreactions next week.
Mm-hmm.
They have two games against Carolina down the stretch, which helps, certainly. No doubt about it. I think you can beat the Raiders. You're not beating the Chargers. Cowboys in Jerry World, there's always a chance. And you're beating the Saints. Atlanta down the stretch. They play the Chargers after their bye. Minnesota, that's a loss. They're beating the Raiders, I think. They're beating the... Actually, Atlanta might have it better. The last 4 weeks of the season, they're facing teams, other than the Commanders, that they should absolutely beat. It's not by any means an insurmountable thing for Tampa Bay to do, but I just don't see the Falcons slipping up necessarily. Like, Tampa Bay doesn't beat Atlanta. Keep that in mind. They don't play Atlanta again, and they lost both games to the Falcons, so tie goes to Atlanta. So they need to not only... They need to finish a game better. Otherwise, if it's a tie, they're out of it. So they have that much more ground to make up. And I don't think it's likely that they do it.
I guess we got to talk about the pack. Green Bay. The Packers should hit free agency more often.
I wouldn't say that's an overreaction by any means. I mean, you'll remember, of course, back this offseason, they signed Josh Jacobs to a massive deal and signed Xavier McKinney away from the Giants for 4 years and close to $70 million. And it worked out pretty well for him. Jacobs and McKinney were very much the stars on Sunday's game against a rather beaten-down Niners team. Jacobs had 106 yards and 3 touchdowns, whereas McKinney intercepted his 7th pass of the season. Yeah, it might actually be time to say that, yeah, it's been interesting watching you did good. It's worked for him watching him develop homegrown talent, and there's certainly a place for that. But, you know, maybe we should start thinking about hitting that free agency well more often, because they seem to hit on that more often than not. And when they do, they hit big.
Carolina, Bryce Young has turned a corner. Is that an overreaction, or is that reality?
I'm not sure I'm willing to say it yet. Because, I mean, yeah, you went up against the Chiefs and a very tough Chiefs defense on Sunday. You could make an argument that that's one of the best starts we've seen out of him in his career. He's getting better, but I'm still not convinced that he's going to be the franchise guy, ultimately. I don't think he'll ever be the player that he was expected to be when the Panthers drafted him in the first place.
Yeah.
I can see how a game like that would make you feel better. But I guess I'm not ready to say that he's turned that corner yet. I'd like to see him with a better cast around him before I start making that argument.
And we have an overreaction or a reality regarding our Detroit Lions.
All right, bring it on.
The Vikings-Lions game in Week 18 will decide number one seed in the NFC playoffs. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
I'll be honest, I think it's an overreaction. I think the Lions will have cinched it by then. Like we've talked about, the Bills are the last... That's the last game that I really think that you're likely to lose. And Minnesota is going to need to ultimately considering that you have you've already beaten them once this season. The tiebreaker is not going to Minnesota, it doesn't look like.
No.
They're not going to be able to sweep the season series against us. And when you look at the rest of the way that they, what they've got to do, they still got to go to Arizona, who is going to play them tough. They still, well, they play them in Minnesota, but they still got to play a Cardinals team that is fighting for a spot atop the NFC West. They have to play the Falcons, who are currently leading that division. Chicago, who they barely beat this week. They got to play in Seattle, which doesn't sound like an easy gimme of a matchup. They play the Pack and then end the season with us. I'll be honest, this division could very well be decided before they play Green Bay, much less before they come to Ford Field on January 5th. This isn't still going to be a thing. The Vikings are absolutely going to make the playoffs, no doubt about it. They are punching that ticket probably fairly early, but the Lions will cinch the NFC North up, I would say, before the end of 2024. I don't think that's that, and that's really not going that much out on a limb to say that, but I think it kind of, I still think that that's how it ends up. So I guess that's our overreactions for the week.
Yes.
And then we got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. So we got to talk a little bit of Red Wings.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to. I know you really don't.
No, I'm enjoying the Red Wings, as I always do, but it's a little difficult. I mean, everybody's kind of been in Lions country, rightfully so. And it's just, yeah, we're having a rough time with that team because lackluster starts. They're trying to go for the beautiful pass, the beautiful, you know, ESPN Sports Center top 10 goal.
And how's that working out for them?
Well, I think their power play is still in top 10 of the league, but they're not that well in the standings. They lost against the Boston Bruins on Saturday. They beat the Islanders on Thursday.
They play them again tonight.
And they play them, yeah. I mean, whoever's putting together the schedule, good job, I guess. Let's get the Islanders right out of the way. So the third and final time of the season is happening tonight. I mean, I guess I shouldn't complain because they faced them twice and beat them twice, once with a 1-0 shutout. So
you just love to see.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of like to see some other teams. I mean, there's there's 30 other NHL teams. I don't know if anybody told you guys who are in charge of making the schedule, but you know what? What do I know?
Not very much, evidently.
Alex Lyon, I'm hearing, is getting the start. And I don't know. This team has not been motivated to really get the shots on goal, to really get in the corners. All the cliches that you've heard have come true with this Red Wing team. They're just not exciting enough. I'll be watching it because I'm a diehard, but anybody who sits there and says, I can't really watch the Wings, there's nothing there for me, I can't disagree with them.
Yeah, it's really hard to argue that there's a whole lot to get excited about.
And here's the thing is, you know, again, we've talked about this many times. On paper, they look great. I mean, they've got, you know, a lot of people are bagging on Vladimir Tarasenko. He's got 2 cups. Patrick Kane's got 3. Alex DeBrincat's doing great. Dylan Larkin is on pace for 50 goals, if you're buying or selling that. I mean, you've got some good people on the team, but then you get into the dregs that is our defense. I mean, you got Mo Sider, who isn't having that great of a year.
No, truly not.
And a bunch of no people. You're really missing a Gothless Bear, and you're missing Jake Wallman. Steve Yzerman has got to figure something out on that blue line. He has to make a change, and he has to make it quick. Because, I mean, what they say around Thanksgiving, that's the first tent pole where you're like, okay, let's see what kind of team we have. I'm afraid to look at the standings. I'm just kind of, you know, looking at it like when I watched The Exorcist for the first time, covering my eyes and peeking out every once in a while.
Hard to blame you, honestly.
It's not good. It's not good. I mean, not that, you know, the line of division is not a powerhouse division in and of itself, but still. You want to be competitive. This is a division you should want to be in. You want to put yourself against the best each and every night. But that's, you know, that's just not happening.
But I would much also rather be, you know, winning games right now.
Oh, and yeah, yeah.
Which just does not seem to be in the cards, apparently.
So they're playing tonight, and then they're playing Wednesday. Friday, 3 o'clock game. That's going to be a weird one against the Devils. We're going to be on the air, and or close to it, and I'm going to be...
You're going to be completely distracted is what you're going to be.
Completely, you know... itching on my face, you know. Y'all got some of that Red Wing game going on?
Like, he's going to be sitting watching the game while during the show. Like,
yeah.
It's really going to be, it's going to be great radio, let me tell you.
No, it's not that kind of year for the Wings, unfortunately. I mean, a lot of people are calling for Derek Lalonde's head.
Well, you want to hear a rumor there, bud? Because I have some things to tell you.
There's a bunch of rumors out there, but what's your favorite?
So Greg, well, it's not my favorite. It's actually probably my least favorite. But Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, he is apparently reporting a rumor of sorts that the Wings could be parting ways with Derek Lalonde.
Yep.
And guess who they're gonna be? Who they would be replacing him with?
Joel Quenneville.
Yes,
that's the one I've heard.
That's the one I've heard too, and I'm not interested even a little bit.
No, he's. I mean, you've made your opinions on this forthright. You're not. He was very complicit with the whole sex abuse scandal that happened in Chicago.
The very least, he knew about it and didn't do anything about it. And that to me, I don't need that. I don't need that here. I really don't. Don't want it. Don't want any part of it. And I know, I get it. He's a 3-time Cup champion. No one's ever taken that away from him. But also, I don't think it's going to happen, for one.
No, I mean, what kind of reason, why would he take on a Wings team like this? Was kind of hoping for Jim Montgomery, but he got snatched up.
Who did he get hired by?
He got hired by St. Louis Blues.
Okay.
The Blues picked him up.
All right. I figured he'd get there again pretty quick.
Bruins coaches, they find another gig real quick. I mean, Montgomery...
I mean, look, granted, Montgomery's probably never the guy who's going to get you over the top to a title. But if you're an underperforming team, he could definitely be the guy who will get you.
He'll get you above 500.
Yeah, he'll get you above 500. He'll get you into the playoffs. He's just not necessarily going to be the guy that wins you a cup.
Of all the coaches that Cam Neely has fired, which we're been up quite to four, a few.
Well, I think we're on the third coach now for Don Sweeney and Cam Neely.
That'd be number four, Sean. And then, this most recent one, Les. I mean, he got a new gig in 5 days.
Not surprising.
No. I mean, the guy had an over 700 percentage. Not 7 point. You know.
Oh yeah, winning percentage.
Winning percentage
with the Bruins. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he was doing quite well. But yeah.
But I think they hold that playoff choke against him though. Against was it Florida? His first year there.
Well, yeah, but they choked again. "Quote unquote choked against the inevitable Stanley Cup winner. So I mean, you got to kind of have. They're looking at it with much more of a fine tooth comb than I am. So you know,
I would hope so.
Yeah, that's kind of their job. They're not calling me. Cam Neely's not like, Adam, what do you think? You know what? Get rid of him. That's what I was saying. Thanks, bud. Click. No.
You mean they're not doing that?
No.
I'm shocked. No, stunned.
No. It's all text now.
okay.
Yeah. Our coach, IDK, LOL, WID. What would you do? I was like, OMG. 86 him. So, I mean, Montgomery, he'll do well in St. Louis. I mean, there's still a lot of good young talent there. He'll bring it home. I was kind of hoping that if the Wings were going to make a move, I would think Montgomery would be the guy. I mean, if we can't have Gallant.
And apparently there's just something in the universe that will not allow that to happen.
There's got to be a situation where Yzerman sent Gallant a text, hey, Red Wings coach, LMN, let me know. He texts back.
LMK, wouldn't it be?
LMK. And, you know, he texts back, OMG, F you. So, I don't know. It is, I mean, I don't know. Would you think that being the head coach of the Red Wings would be an advantageous situation, or do you think this is something that you'd want to steer away from?
I feel like you could absolutely get a, like, if the right coach could get this team into the playoffs, maybe even a playoff series, but I don't think you're necessarily getting further than that with the current roster that you have, unless, you know, some young guys take some real strides real quick. Yeah. I think it could definitely, you could improve on Lalonde, without a doubt, and get into the playoffs, and at least be somewhat of a contender with this, not a playoff Stanley Cup contender necessarily with this group, but
they have to make the playoffs. To be able to say they were better than they were last year, and that's just not, we're not on pace for that.
No.
The team that is on the ice right now, they're just not motivated. I know I've said that, I've beaten that dead horse, but this Derek Lalonde, he doesn't seem to be motivating his players to do better. At the end of a game of a loss, he's like, well, you know, we learned some things here and here, blah, blah, blah. I want a coach that's going to kick the trash can once in a while.
You want John Tortorella is what you really want.
No, not that extreme. Not that extreme. I don't need somebody who's, you know, looking for newspaper headlines as well as success. I need somebody who will, you know, crack the whip a little bit, get these guys up and running. Because, I mean, on paper, we have a pretty decent team. In our pipeline, we have a great team when you consider, Sebastian Cosa on the way. You got Nate Danielson on the way. This has a lot to do. I mean, there's a lot of different players. One of them just jumped right out of my head.
Marco Casper?
No, he's in there.
He's already here.
But I mean, there's a lot of great players. Oh, Amadeus Lombardi.
You just love the name.
I love his name.
There's talent there.
Bright future coming up, but you got to have a bench boss who will know what to do with them. And I just don't think Lalonde, he's used to being on the side. He's used to being the side of John Cooper. Now he's the head guy, and I think he's too big for his britches.
I don't know if I necessarily say that, but I definitely think he's in over his head.
Yeah. Like, whatever analogy you'd like.
I would say absolutely. He just wasn't ready for the big time. Like, no. He wasn't ready to take that next step and be a head coach.
He's an assistant coach.
He is. I mean, maybe he gets it right with somebody else, but I don't think it's going to happen here.
No.
I don't know who's going to end up being the guy. I kind of hope it ain't Quenneville, but...
Well, here's another scenario. I want to put this across your desk.
Shoot.
Their power play has not been bad. What if Yzerman came down from above and said, Tanguay, Lalonde, you're switching places?
I don't know how much it would help. I don't know if...
I don't think it would... Yeah.
I don't... Because, I mean, you're not really changing the voice, ultimately, and I feel like that just creates unnecessary friction that doesn't need to exist there.
There would be... Well, I don't know. Lalonde is just a happy-go-lucky guy. He, like Ned Flanders. Well, you know, absolutely. Positively.
Well, you say that, but then you don't really...
Behind the scenes, yeah.
You say that now, but, you know, now once he actually is now riding the... You know, he's... second banana to somebody else, whether he's going to feel that way, at least in that place. Like, I think you just really got to do the right thing and get rid of him entirely at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd like to see him hire someone with some experience. Like, I think that's probably the way you go with the next hire, not someone who's never been a head coach at the NHL level.
Right.
It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. Stick around. It's Happy Hour at Solid State Radio as we get set to get the hell out of Dodge here on a Monday. Stick around. Coming up next, a full hour of local, original, something or other. I don't know.
Turkey recipes, absolutely. Local, original turkey recipes from Michigan.
Is that what you do?
That's okay. Right. No, local, original music. It's going to be a good time.
Is it? Is it going to be a good time, Adam?
There is a 50% guarantee it's going to be a good time.
All right. That's all I need. You had me at 50%. Sessions is next. See you tomorrow at 3.